Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
December 13th, 2005, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, photography etiquette. Before I get to today's main subject, which is etiquette, I have a couple things I want to cover real quickly. First of all, on the newsstands right now, the January 2006 edition of Macworld magazine has a feature article on problem-solving tips for digital photographers. I'm one of the contributing writers to that. It's really a cool piece. It's set up in problem and solution kind of format. And between the three of us that worked on it, we have all sorts of good stuff. So next time you're on the newsstand, you might want to take a look at Macworld magazine, the January edition, and see what you think. And speaking of Macworld related stuff, the big Macworld Expo is coming up in early January, I believe January 9th, in San Francisco. And if you're interested in Aputure, which is Apple's new professional photo management tool, I have a two-day Power Tools workshop on that, and you can sign up for it online. And I'll put all this information in the show notes, both the link to Macworld magazine and also a link to the Power Tools workshop on Aputure. But if you're kind of interested in what's going on with Aputure and if it's really for you, or if you've already decided that you like it and you want to dig deeper into it, I think you really like this Power Tools workshop. It's pretty cool stuff. I've been working really hard, getting the workbook together and trying to learn every nook and cranny of Aputure. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun in January really digging into it. Okay, so let's talk about photo etiquette for a minute. The nice thing about taking a picture of a tree is that you don't have to ask its permission to publish it. I guess this is one reason why a lot of people like landscape photography. You go out, you take the picture, you can publish the picture wherever you want. Now, when you take pictures of people, it's a little bit different. Friends and family, generally speaking, which, you know, let's face it, it's the bulk of our photographic subjects. Generally speaking, all we have to do is let them know that we want to enter a picture of them in a photo contest or whatever, and they'll say yes if they like the shot, and off we go. However, I recommend that if you're getting serious about your photography, that you consider getting model releases for all the shots that you take. It's just a lot better way to go. Now, in the show notes, I'll actually have a template for a model release. I'll say right at the top here, I'm not a lawyer, and this is not legal advice. Basically, what I'm going to be talking about is what I've learned over the years being a professional photographer and what has been accepted in the business. However, if you have any questions and if you really want to get the skinnies on this stuff, make sure that you research it further. Just so that you feel confident. But the model release that I've been using for years was approved by a lawyer at one point, and I think would hold up, and it could be a good starting point for what you use. Now, why do you need a model release? Well, the fact of the matter is that when you take a picture of someone and their face is recognizable, and that's often the key to if you need a model release or not, is the person recognizable in the shot? Then the thinking is that if the shot is used, especially if it ends up being used for advertising or on the cover of a magazine, a product shot, let's say promoting some kind of product, things like that, then you need approval from that person so that, you know, everything is clean. Sometimes we find that it's best to actually make sure that you pay the person something and have a record of that, so that sort of ices the agreement. In other words, I have this person's permission to use his or her shot. They have been paid X amount of dollars. I have a model release, and that will usually suffice for just about any purpose. It gets a little fuzzier when you're entering pictures in a contest or using pictures for what we call editorial reportage. And in that case, sometimes you may need a model release, sometimes not. And I've really found that really the best way to go is just have a model release and then you don't have to think about it. Often what I do is on a grab shot or some sort of spontaneous shot is that I'll go ahead and record the picture, get the shots first, and then ask the person, you know, tell the person who I am and that I'm a photographer, and would you sign a model release for me so that if I need to use a picture for a contest or something, then I can go ahead and do that. I use a lot of my pictures in magazine articles and for the books that I write. And rarely do I have a person say to me, no, I'd prefer not to sign a model release. 99 out of 100 times, the person will say, okay. And, you know, one thing that I do is that I make sure I have a business card to give the person so that they can get a hold of me. And the other thing that I say is that, and if I do use the shot, I'll let you know. And a lot of times, people really appreciate that, if for no other reason, so they can get a copy of the book or a copy of the magazine article and show their friends. So those are really two tips to help, you know, ease this process. Make sure the person knows who you are. Give them a business card or something. And then assure them that if you do use the shot, that you'll contact them. And, of course, their contact information is entered on the model release when they sign it, when they give you permission. So I think, just in general, it's a good habit to get into. Carry model releases with you. And if you don't happen to have one in your camera bag, make sure you get the person's contact information so that you can send them a model release later. Of course, the thing that I've noticed is that if you send them a release later, you may or may not get it back. So it's really best to try to get a model release at the end of the shoot, whether it's a formal portrait, out, you know, street shooting, wherever you happen to run into it, try to get the model release right on the spot. And that will eliminate a lot of the headaches that you may have up the road. Now, how about just photography etiquette in general? When to take pictures and when not to take pictures? Or if you do take a picture, how do you take a picture? I think this whole conversation started when I mentioned in the previous podcast that it's not really wise to use a flash during sporting events because there's a chance that you could actually flash somebody in the eyes during the event, and you know it could affect his or her performance. And I stick by that. I think really a lot of times I do come out of the editorial world of photography. And even when I shoot a wedding, and I do use a flash during weddings, but even when I shoot weddings, my goal is to not be noticeable, not to be part of the action, but to be in position to record the action. And I think this is very important. I hear all sorts of horror stories from ministers and priests about wedding photographers. And one of the things that I do before a wedding is I actually go to the rehearsal the night before. This gives me a chance to meet all the family, and it gives me a chance to talk with whoever is performing the ceremony. And a lot of times right away, if they've had a bad experience with a photographer, they will go into, you know, all the things that they don't want you to do. And generally speaking, their concerns actually center around the photographer becoming part of the action instead of staying out of the way and letting the wedding ceremony unfold on its own. And I agree with this completely. I think that part of the thing that you want to do as a photographer is learn how to record events, whether it be a wedding, a graduation, a sporting event, without getting in the way of the event itself. And a lot of times, the way that I do this is through planning. I like to go to where I'm going to be shooting. Let's say, let's stay with our wedding ceremony example, and get there for rehearsal, watch the walkthrough, and figure out, well, I can stand over here during this part of the wedding, and I won't be in anyone's way, but yet I have a good angle. And then when the action moves over to here, let's say a candle lighting ceremony, then I can move to this position and get a shot and still not be in anyone's way. And I just think this is good etiquette. This is the kind of thing that will endear you to not only the people that you're photographing, but the people that are also watching the event. One thing that happened to me, and I was a little embarrassed by this, is that I was shooting someone talking during a keynote address at a conference. I do a lot of conference photography, event photography. And I was using a bounce flash to do that because the lighting was very low in the room and the person was gesturing a lot. And I was having a hard time recording their actions with existing light and not getting motion blur. They were moving around. The person was moving around a lot, making a lot of gestures. So I felt like I had to go to bounce flash. Now, the flash that I use, it's a Canon flash. It actually has a little translucent window that slides up. And so what it allows, some light bounces off this panel. It's actually a panel that slides up. So light bounces off the panel toward the subject and provides a little bit of kick light at the same time that the flash is bouncing off the subject or bouncing off the ceiling onto the subject. What I didn't realize at the time was that because this panel that I was using for the kick light was translucent, that the light was hitting it and it was you know, creating kind of a brightness. So the people behind me were actually have this panel lighting up very bright as I was taking shots, and it was distracting to them. And it didn't occur to me at all, because I'm up near the front shooting away, flash. I try not to take any more shots than possible. And this is another etiquette thing, is don't just click, especially if you're using a flash or if you have a camera that makes a noticeable sound. Try not to take any more shots than you absolutely have to. Try to time your shots so that you record an exposure at the peak moment and then wait for your next opportunity and not just put this thing in burst mode and be clicking away. Anyway, after the keynote speech, a person came up to me and told me how irritating my flash was to them and how distracting it was for them during the talk. And this was a conference that was going to be going on for a number of days. And I'm really glad. At the time, I felt badly about it. But I'm really glad that the person told me so that I could go back, figure out a different way to record the shoot without irritating everyone in the room. Again, I had to go back to an existing light solution. Basically, what I did was I put a faster lens on. I went to a prime lens, like I talked about in the last show, my 85 f1.8 lens, got rid of the flash, pushed up the ISO, and then tried to time my shots more so that I would record the exposure when the person was holding a gesture for a minute. And for the most part, it worked really well. And I was able to be less obtrusive and probably alienated, fewer people in the audience as a result. So the point here is to try to be very aware of not only, how the subjects may feel about what you're doing, but also how other people in the room are viewing your work. flashes do have their place. You have to use them at times. But when you don't have to use them, it's best not to, and try to go existing light with a fast lens. So to recap about all of this, here's just a few things to keep in mind for your next shoot, and especially if it's an event, sporting, wedding, graduation, even a birthday party or something. Keep a few things in mind. First of all, if you think you're going to want to use these shots in a contest or for a magazine article or any sort of publication, it's really best right there on the spot to get a model release from the main people, the main subjects. And remember, it's really important if the subject is under 18 that the parent signs the model release. You can't get a model release from a 16-year-old. It won't hold up. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but this is something that I've learned just from everyday work, and it's a rule that I go by. So if the subject is under 18, then get the parent to sign the model release and have both the parent's name and the subject's name on the model release and the parent giving permission to use the photo. Model releases, really a big deal when you start getting into publication work. Then the other thing to keep in mind is how, as a photographer, you're affecting the event. Hopefully you're not. Now, you know, obviously people are going to know you're there because you're there. And in my case, I'm tall, and there's no way I can just kind of, you know, go around on my hands and knees so no one sees me. And plus, maybe I don't want that angle. But by planning a little bit, by scouting out your location, scouting out the event before it actually happens, I think you can build a plan to help you be able to figure out where the angles are for the shots that you need without bothering either the people that you're taking a picture of or the people watching the event. So planning becomes very important in event photography. Also think about your flash. Sure, sometimes you're going to need to use a flash. If you're using a flash, though, I recommend taking fewer shots and really trying to time your shots so that you're using the flash as little as possible. And then be aware that if you're using bounce flash or something like that, are you disturbing people that are around you? Hopefully not. But remember, I didn't realize it either until someone came up and tapped me on the shoulder when I was using bounce flash for that keynote presentation. So think about, you know, how the flash may be a thing. If it's in a really dark room, for example, if the lights of the house lights are down, then people are going to notice the flash much more than when there's ambient light. The other thing is, make sure you don't cross in front of the action. Don't be walking across the front of the altar during a wedding. If you have to change positions, then go down the side of the room, across the back, and come up on the other side. Don't go right in front of what's going on there. And by the same token, don't stand there in front of the mother of the bride, blocking her view during the ceremony. So be very aware of where you're positioned and how that position affects other people. And finally, this is just a personality thing, but you will be interacting with people during these events. And people will ask you if they can maybe see some of the pictures, or they'll ask you if you mind if they take some shots, or they'll just, just ask you general questions. Try to always put on, you know, your most friendly face. Be nice to people. Smile, you know, when you talk to them. Listen to their question. Don't talk down to them. Just because you have maybe an expensive camera and they have a point and shoot, it doesn't mean that the shots they need are any less important. Keep all these things in mind, and I think you'll have success not only in getting good shots, but in being known as a photographer that people like having at events. And maybe someone in the audience will say, hey, I really like the way this person conducts himself, and I'd like to hire him for my wedding or for my next event. it's just something to think about. So I hope you enjoy this stuff. This is a conversation that I'd love to keep going. We can discuss it online with the comments, or we can revisit again in another podcast. This maybe would be considered just getting the ball rolling. And let me know what you think, and we'll take it from there. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.